Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to Premier League All Access with me, Sam Matterface. And alongside me this week, we've got the international football expert, Kevin Hatchard, and FA Cup winner, Scott Minto, to review all the Premier League action. And what a weekend it was, especially in Manchester. Here's what's coming up on the show.
Up steps Ezra, right-footed, goes it in! Fantastic free kick! He is back! With a bang!
It's Newcastle 3, Wolves 0. What a goal from Tino Livramento.
Brentford 2, Chelsea 2. Chelsea have been poor in the second half, but they do have themselves an equaliser. And it's Axel Disasi who's scored it. In fact, Semenyo has just scored. And he's clinched this one for Bournemouth.
It's Burnley 0, Bournemouth 2.
Son into the area to settle it! Was there ever any doubt when Son Heung-min races clear? Spurs 3! Crystal Palace 1.
West Ham scoring twice in added time to steal the points. Everton 1, West Ham 3.
A minute to go. Luton 2, Aston Villa 3.
It's Nottingham Forest 0, Liverpool 1. It's Darwin Nunez who has scored in the 9th minute of stoppage time.
Well, here we go. Erling Haaland finishes the game for Manchester City. Comeback complete for the champion. Manchester City 3, Manchester United 1.
Ah, the enigma that is Alex Crook, not available today because he is sunning himself in Portugal. I'm sure he would have a lot to say about this match. Actually, Scott, I've noticed that he's got into a little bit of a habit of when Manchester United have a tough weekend, he disappears. I wonder why that might be.
Do you know what, Sam? He plans ahead, doesn't he, of any tough fixtures, know what's going to happen. But it did make me laugh. I heard him on the breakfast show this morning and Jeff Stelling kind of killed him. He said, how much it's raining in Portugal. So we, of course, don't want it to rain while he's there, do we?
I do. I want it to rain the whole way through, in fact. Right, OK. Kev, you OK?
Yeah, very good. Nice little mix for me. Bundesliga title race on Friday. Then got to watch Dune on Sunday night. So perfect weekend for me.
Not sure there is a Bundesliga title race. Is there anymore?
Not anymore. No, 10 points with 10 games to go.
Oh, dear.
Absolutely.
Right, OK, let's get stuck into the Manchester derby because it was another fantastic day for Pep Guardiola and Manchester City, who definitely had the benefit of Phil the Power.
Champions of Europe in huge letters. A reminder for Manchester United, what you once were.
Manchester City 0, Manchester United 1. Those travelling fans wanted Marcus Rashford to do his talking on the pitch. And my word, has he just done that?
I've got to tell you, it's an absolutely incredible strike.
We played really good. We started incredible well after making a fantastic goal from Rashford.
I can't believe I've just watched that. Erling Haaland has just missed an open goal from 3 yards.
Manchester City 1, Manchester United 1. He got a hat-trick in this fixture last season. And the Stockport Iniesta has just lived up to his nickname. Phil Foden's that man again. Phil Foden, who just loves scoring in a Manchester derby.
I'm pleased with the performance of our team. Great spirit, very determined. We keep this going. And there's still a lot in decision to make.
Well, here we go. Erling Haaland finishes the game
for Manchester City.
Sofyan and Amrabat, he should have been nowhere near wearing a Manchester United shirt. It's not good enough to play for a club like Manchester United. That was shocking.
Manchester City 3, Manchester United 1.
So let's start with the Manchester derby, gents, because I thought it was quite a fascinating game, really. I mean, Phil Foden signalling his intent straight away, really early in the game, I thought, right on the front foot and causing problems for Manchester United almost as soon as the game had begun. They had the penalty shout inside 3 minutes when John Stones went over inside the penalty area. Actually, it was never a penalty. He kicked the back of Casemiro's foot. And Manchester United were sort of constricted in their own penalty area for so much time. They went with this tactic to try and control City, but Scott, you can never control City. And even though they went in front with a terrific goal, ultimately, there was a sense of inevitability about what was going to happen.
Yeah, there was, Sam. And I'll be honest with you, you know, when Erling Haaland missed that chance right on half time and you saw Pep with his head in his hands and even coming out to start the second half looking very frustrated, I was more relaxed for City than he was, clearly, because I just thought if they carry on playing like that, they're going to go and win the game. And all they needed was that first goal, and what a brilliance it was from Phil Foden. They were by far and away the better side. I do feel for Ten Hag. I think his tactics were pretty spot on. I thought he was quite clever in terms of the 4-2-4, but actually there wasn't really a centre forward, because what you try and do is make yourself as solid as possible, but City were that good. It was only a matter of time, and I think 3-1 didn't flatter them.
And that's the issue, isn't it, Kevin? You can't criticise them too much, Manchester United, for their approach. I mean, it's not a great sight for Manchester United fans of a certain age who have witnessed this period of domination to almost sort of see them subjugate themselves in such a way where they go to the Etihad Stadium and have to be sort of, so submissive, so pragmatic. But it's the only way, isn't it? It's the only way. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work. But every now and again, there's Crystal Palace.
Yeah, it's the only way now. And I think it is a damning indictment of how the two clubs have diverged in recent years, because they're just in completely different spheres. I know people will say, well, what if they make more of their breakaway chances? But after Rashford scores, there's no meaningful shot on target for the rest of the game. And that is a damning indictment of the way that club has been set up in recent seasons. We'll see if it changes. But I just thought City played some wonderful football. Phil Foden now, I mean, Guardiola says he's the best player in the Premier League. He's certainly not far off it. He's the perfect package because he's willing to do all the work without the ball that Guardiola demands. He's so imaginative on the ball. That passion that he has for football just absolutely shines through. And it did make me think how blessed England are going into the Euros, because we have genuine world-class talent in a number of positions. You've got a world-class centre-forward in Kane. You've got Jude Bellingham. Declan Rice is having a great season with Arsenal. You've got Phil Foden. You've got Bukayo Saka. I mean, it's a really, really good time to be an England fan, I think. And I think that should make people very excited about the summer.
Yeah, and one of the other great facets that doesn't get mentioned enough is Kyle Walker is nearly 34 years of age, yet his pace is so frightening that Marcus Rashford, when he's running through one-on-one, knows that Kyle Walker is coming. And look, I don't think it's a foul, but I know that Marcus Rashford is sitting there thinking to himself, well, he's going to beat me anyway, so I've got to try and make something out of this, because if I don't, we're going to lose the ball anyway. So, because Kyle Walker is that good, and I think that's underrated. That's not talked about enough. You know, England need really top quality players, not only going forward, but at the back as well. And I think him and John Stones are certainly in that top bracket of defender.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned John Stones. By the way, I do think if United and Ten Hag had gone for it in the way that Luton did, then it could have been a similar scoreline, because I was at Kenilworth Road and you don't go man for man against Manchester United at Manchester City. But absolutely, I think Kyle Walker, you know, it doesn't matter what his birth certificate is saying, he's not getting any slower, is he? And there was that one in the first half where, you know, it was a poor header where it bounced up. And you think that if he'd done it, well, he wouldn't have been caught. But it's in the back of his mind that he's got Kyle Walker catching him. And with that one as well, absolutely, it's not enough. It's what defenders do all the time. And he knows it's not enough. He's touched his arm and his whole body has gone down. It's all the psychological aspect that Kyle Walker has from a defensive point of view. So with him and John Stones, exactly what Kev just said, chucking those two players you know, I've mentioned about this summer is very exciting ahead.
It's very difficult to sort of assess where Manchester United are, isn't it? Because we know the takeover is in place now and they're in a state of flux. But whether or not Ten Hag continues at the end of the season or not, which I think is becoming increasingly debatable, by the way, I think we can look at Manchester City and see where they are. And they've got more competition this year, and Liverpool obviously are doing what they are doing. Arsenal are still very much in the title hunt as well. But I think Manchester City, although they are not perfect, and they are conceding, Kev, they're conceding too many goals, aren't they, really? Let's be honest about it. Do you think, though, there is going to be one of those days, at some point there will be a day where they can't get themselves out of it with this supreme attacking play, and actually things don't go in? I suppose the Chelsea day is an example of that.
Yeah, I think there is a vulnerability there. I think that's fair to say. Which is interesting because, of course, if you look at last season, some of their defensive numbers were outrageously good. And he switched to this idea of packing the team with big defenders and he had that balance. They haven't quite had that this season. But what really struck me at the weekend, actually, was looking at the bench and looking at the quality of the squad. And, you know, I remember when Zinchenko went and when Gabriel Jesus went, you know, that was a while ago, but we raised our eyebrows and thought, oh, they're bold decisions. And you look at some of the young players who've come through, but actually when everybody's fit for City, they're formidable. They really are. And what they've put together, which I think isn't talked about enough, actually, is a full toolbox. I mean, there are so many different options that he has. You've got Doku, who's one of the best one-on-one dribblers around. Grealish, when he's fit, is really good at setting the tempo of a game in terms of keeping possession and drawing fouls, things like that. De Bruyne, obviously, now that he's fit, gives you so many options as well. Defensively, they can go big. They can go people who are excellent in possession. They've just got so many ways that they can hurt you. The only difference, I think, the only real weak spot is Rodri. If you lose Rodri, he's irreplaceable. And I do think we've seen this season, when Rodri's not there, they are not the same team. So I think that's the only area I would look at their squad and think, well, if they lost him, they'd be in big trouble. Everywhere else, I think they've got great depth.
A couple of quick hits from the Manchester derby. I thought Onana played well. I thought Manchester United's setup was probably the only way that they could go for it. But because they don't do it very often, I still don't think they're the fittest team in the world. They were knackered after an hour. As a result of that, the momentum certainly shifted. I don't think they had a meaningful shot on target in the second half, really, did they? And then you look at some of the other big statistics. United losing a game in the Premier League for the first time, which they were ahead at half-time for the first time since 2014, the Leicester game. I was at that game. And 11th defeat of the season for Manchester United, which is a sad indictment of exactly where they are, Scott. Just a quick word on Erling Haaland's miss. Someone said earlier today it was the worst miss ever. It's not the worst miss ever because there's no consequence to it, right? So it's only the worst miss ever if you miss it and your team don't come back and win the game, right? So there's got to be context. Correct? Am I wrong here?
Do you know what? It was a bad miss, and not having to go through the technical side of it, perhaps he could have just ducked down or maybe even used another part of his body or just a lighter touch. I'm sorry, this is Erling Haaland we're talking about. This is the best striker in the world. Whether it was a bad miss or not, you know, he's just come off a game where he scored five. He scored one in the second half. It was a bad miss, but you're right. It didn't matter, and it was never going to matter because they were always going to win the game.
And Kev, the goal from Rashford is impressive. He takes it brilliantly. But then if you're going to criticise him after that, he doesn't do enough when he gets other opportunities. I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant goal. And he's scored five goals against City now. Only Rooney and Cantona have netted more. But let's be clear, you've got to do more than just score one brilliant goal in a game.
Yeah, you do. And it was a glimpse of what he's capable of. And we saw that time and time again last season. I don't question his commitment to the club and haven't. I understand there have been performances where the body language hasn't been great. I understand that. There's no doubt that his form has gone off a cliff this season. But I think he's in a team that has really struggled. But you're absolutely right. There's a moment when he could go clean through and he bobbles it. He doesn't manage to bring the ball under control properly. And, you know, with his pace, he might have been away. I thought the Kyle Walker thing was really poor, actually. I thought as soon as the hand goes on the arm, he's down. Why is he down? You know, that's an opportunity to try and surge through, give Walker more to do. I understand what you're saying about it's in the back of his head. Oh, no, Kyle Walker's coming. But you have to be stronger than that. That's not good enough at that level, I don't think. So, brilliant goal. And I think he has had some moments, actually, in recent games where you've thought, there's the real Marcus Rashford. This game does tend to bring a lot out of him, but he didn't do enough after that. And I think Garnacho's another one. Young player, so you have to give him some leeway, but he makes some bad decisions as well. So I think that's got to improve as he gets more experience.
And the key thing with Garnacho, with Rashford, you know, Rashford was obviously upset that he feels he's got too much criticism in recent time, but this is the truth. The truth is, and we mentioned this on Thursday's podcast, if you score goals, you're playing well, no one criticises you. Yeah. No one looks at your external activities. No one cares. It's all about the football. And it's all about the football for me, for Scott, for Crookie, for you, for whatever. Everybody watching really just wants Marcus Rashford to be very, very good. And that was an example of why we've got such high hopes for him, because he can do things like that. And that is what we should be seeing more often from him. Scott, do you want to finish off before we move on to Liverpool?
Just very quickly, for me, it is all about what he does on the pitch, but it doesn't have to be scoring. You know, he had chances, but people miss. Erling Haaland misses. It's about the commitment, the trying. And while I don't doubt his commitment to Manchester United, clearly there's a problem in his head about where he's at right now. Whether the goals come or not, give it 100% every game. And if he does that, then he will come good.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides, and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
You can hear the boos here at the City Ground for the officials. But Nunes with the late goal. Real drama in the Premier League.
You'd want to be a referee in the modern game, eh? Mm. You know, yes, there's an error. The reaction over the top.
And if Forest go down and say they get a sort of a few points penalties because of FFP breaches, I can see this running on beyond the end of the season.
And what disappoints me to some degree is that, you know, I brought in the communication kits and therefore maybe his colleague could have helped him, but they didn't.
You are frustrated, you are disappointed, you are sad, of course. It's a tough one to take.
We're at the elite level of football here in the Premier League. You can't afford mistakes like that because making mistakes like that might cost a manager his job.
So these referees are under far, far more pressure than any referee and officials have ever been.
You know, that whole referee Clattenburg situation is just causing for me an abstraction from what is the real necessity, and that is the performance of the team. And that's what they need to focus on there.
I think sometimes there's a degree of ignorance about what a referee or a former referee can actually contribute to the debate and discussion.
I tell you what, it was always going to be difficult for Liverpool, right? Because they hadn't won at Nottingham Forest since 1984. And sometimes you just get these grounds where you don't win at. And it just seems to be that that is their place. And I thought this was going to be their undoing again until the 99th minute of the game. Lucky? Possibly. Persistent? Possibly. Is this just an example, Kevin, of the mentality monsters that Jurgen Klopp just keeps on banging on about? And that's why this team, even when they're not playing at their very best, are still very much in with the shout of winning the big prizes.
Absolutely. It was the perfect example of it, I think. I mean, you looked at that League Cup final. I mean, that's an outrageous achievement, really. And I can understand why Klopp talked about it as his most enjoyable final victory, because of the way they fought through and they did it again. They gave up chances like they always do, especially away from home. They'll always give the opposition opportunities. They didn't take them. Nottingham Forest. I understand the angst about what happened late on, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I want to come back to being the Darwin Nunez Appreciation Society yet again, because I've been that all season.
We got the full fan club. We got the full fan club in here. We got me, you and Scott, and no crookie to pour cold water on our thoughts.
What the guy does that I love, we talked about Phil Foden, he's exactly the same. They affect the game. They never hide. They constantly affect the game. And the reason sometimes Darwin Nunez will have horrendous misses and do really weird things is because he's constantly trying to do things. He doesn't hide. He's always in goal-scoring positions. He's always trying to bully people. He's always trying to try things that won't always work. But that header, with the game on the line, is outrageously good. The ball from McAllister is outstanding, but the header, under pressure, contested header, he has to find that corner. He does. It's a brilliant goal. And I can see why Liverpool fans love him. I think he's tremendous. But Forrest,
he's got great personality. But both teams had opportunities in the games, loads of great opportunities, in fact, in the game. And you mentioned that Liverpool gave some up to Elanga, Awoniyi, Hudson-Odoi. They all had chances. Origi had an opportunity in the game. In fact, there were so many moments where it looked like there was going to be a certain goal, and then there wasn't. Do we bemoan the finishing, Scott, in this match, or credit the goalkeeping? Because Quevin Kelleher and Matt Sells actually played absolutely superbly in the match.
Yeah, I mean, they were superb, I have to say. And that one where Langer was through on goal, I actually think it probably would have been pulled back for offside, but Kelleher didn't know that. It was a wonderful save. There were a couple of opportunities, because I was there at the City Ground for Talk Sport. And, you know, Forest gave as good as they got. Liverpool weren't good in the first half. They were much better in the second, but ultimately they had 22 attempts and only two on target. Forest, 8 attempts and 2 on target. So a little bit of poor finishing, some very good goalkeeping, but absolutely 100% behind what you're saying about the mentality monster. They will never give up. And they are very much, whatever you say about Manchester City, and I've stuck with them all season, they are very much in this title race. We still don't know about Arsenal. We still don't know if they can do it deep in. I don't think their mentality side of things in the business end of the season will be a problem for Liverpool.
No way. I mean, you look at the business end of the games. If you look to the last 15 minutes of games, they score an inordinate number of goals in that last 15 minutes of matches. Over the course of Liverpool's Premier League career under Jurgen Klopp, they've scored 18 90th minute winners. Let's talk about the controversy. Owners in the mouth of the tunnel chasing people down the into the refereeing room saying, respect the players. And Vangelos Marinakos losing his head. Nuno Espirito Santo keeping away. Mark Clattenburg being the mouthpiece saying, the rules weren't applied properly. Look, what's your take on it, Scott? I mean, you were there. Obviously, it kicked off towards the end. The incident happens inside the Liverpool penalty area. Konate goes down. And there's 2 minutes after that, then Liverpool score. So sort of dragging it back to sort of 2 minutes beforehand is a little bit sort of, is it tenuous? I don't know. I mean, does it change the momentum of the game that much that there was a wrong decision? Everyone makes a wrong decision at certain points. And yes, there were wrong decisions made in this. And it's worth pointing out that actually the collision that happens between Kelleher, Konate and Ryan Yates could have actually, or should have actually, resulted in a free kick to Liverpool inside the penalty area anyway, because Ryan Yates' foot is so high, it is dangerous play. And on at any other juncture in the game, if that scene, that would have been given as a free kick anyway. So, you know, I think there's sort of six and two threes here in one sense. Scott, what was your take on it?
Yeah, look, I'll try and be, I mean, it's obviously been all over the weekend, so I'll try and be as concise as I can possibly be. it was decided it wasn't a foul, Konate, and that's fine. And once it's gone out the penalty area and Forrest had the ball, then the ball should have been given back to Forrest.
True, absolutely true.
But 1 minute and 50 seconds passed where Forrest had a couple of attempts as well. They could have tried to get rid of the ball, but they didn't. They should have defended a corner a lot better. They should have kicked the ball into row Z. They didn't. And it was brilliant play, you have to say, for McAllister and Darwin Núñez. Look, I understand when you're down there, it becomes even more, you know, dramatic and controversial.
You can't chase a referee down a tunnel, though, can you? I mean, no, it doesn't matter how frustrated you are, you can't do that.
No, absolutely. And look, he's got to look at himself, and maybe there's a culture in Greece and Turkey where you do that type of thing for the owners. You know, I don't know. But all I will say is, from a footballing and neutral point of view, and I feel for Forrest, I really do, from a neutral point of view and from an ex-player's point of view, you've had 1 minute and 50 seconds to make sure they don't go down the other end and score a goal. And you've had possession of the ball as well. So for me, it's a moot point.
And also, Kevin, I'll say this now. We'll move on from that particular incident because it has been done to death. But Forrest, when they are on form and Elanga and Hudson-Odoi and Awoniyi are all steaming forward, they sort of raise the question, why on earth are you in trouble in the first place?
Yeah, and, you know, they lost Brennan Johnson, who we might talk about later, and that was a huge blow. But there's enough attacking quality there to be scoring plenty of goals. They've been more attacking under Nuno than I thought they might be. More expansive, and you know, they should be fine, really. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of any potential punishments down the track, of course, but in terms of how they are right now, I think they should have enough firepower to be fine. I was surprised Awoniyi didn't start the game. That caught me by surprise, I must admit. I think he could have done, you know, a lot of damage. He's an excellent player, I think, as Liverpool well know. But yeah, I think they will be fine.
Ex-Liverpool would have been fired up to do that damage too. I think he scored against them. Didn't he score against them last year as well?
Yeah,
he did. Nuno was frustrated afterwards. But Liverpool, wow, 4 wins in 11 days with half their team out is pretty damn impressive. It's why I sort of keep saying to you, I think they're going to do it this year. I've just got this feeling about them. I've had a feeling about them actually since they played Nottingham Forest earlier in the season. I don't know why it was, but he just said something to me during that day, and I just thought, he thinks that they can do something here.
Up steps Ezra, right footed, can't get in! Fantastic free kick! He is back with a bang!
Brentford have turned it around thanks to a wonder goal from Johan Wisse. This is absolutely magnificent. It's an overhead kick.
Fulham 3, Brighton 0. Icing on the cake, and it's Adama Traoré.
It's Newcastle 3, Wolves 0. What a goal from Tino Livramento.
Brentford 2, Chelsea 2. Chelsea have been poor in the second half, but they do have themselves an equaliser. And it's Axel Disasi who scored it.
West Ham who've taken the 3 points. Everton 1, West Ham 3. West Ham scoring twice in added time to steal the points.
Son into the area to settle it! Was there ever any doubt when Son Heung-min races clear? Spurs 3, Crystal Palace 1.
It's Nottingham Forest 0, Liverpool 1. It's Darwin Núñez who has scored in the 9th minute of stoppage time.
Wow, what a crucial goal.
Real drama in the Premier League. This division always delivers.
A minute to go, Luton 2, Aston Villa 3. Luca Dina to head in from 6 yards out.
Everton against West Ham United. 3-1 winners, West Ham United. Bad news for Everton. Another game with more late goals. It was added time where West Ham scored twice and won the game. Everton just can't buy a win at this moment in time. I mean, obviously they got their points back last week, so you were expecting them to sort of be buoyed by that, Scott, but it just seems that the issue here is scoring goals, isn't it? They just cannot score enough goals to get themselves away from the danger area.
No, Dominic Calvert-Lewin was on the bench. Beto came on. He obviously scored, but missed a penalty. I do think, though, looking at the performance, and that's all you can do to a certain point. Yes, it's ultimately about scoring goals, but all Sean Dyche could do is try and put out a good performance from his side. And if they carry on playing like that, they'll be fine. Look, they were the better side. West Ham got away with it, in my opinion, as much as I'm delighted that West Ham got the win. And when you've got the opposition goalkeeper as the man of the match, I think that pretty much tells you exactly where they've gone. But yeah, ultimately,
Areola was brilliant. And David Moyes put his hand up and he said all this and he said, yeah, fine. But they haven't won since December. And that becomes a bit of an issue if it keeps rolling on, because the fixtures don't get easier the closer you get to the end of the season.
No, they don't. But again, from a player's point of view, and I would imagine a coaching point of view, is a get you go again. And you just got to make sure it doesn't play in the back of your mind that we haven't won. People like you ramming it down their throat. They haven't won since December.
But just until read out the facts, Scott.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Until they do, the facts are the facts. I just see what I see in terms of the performance. And my bottom line is, we talked about Forest, they should be okay. I actually think Everton are playing better than Forest at the moment, but they do need to be winning games and they do need to be scoring. So that header from Beto, I think, was a very good one. But the missed penalty, obviously, was absolutely crucial.
Okay, let's get stuck into the rest of Saturday's action now. And although we should probably start with victories and people winning and people being very happy, I think probably we should start with the team that have got the blues. Yeah, Chelsea went to Brentford on Saturday. And, you know, obviously, you know, this team have lost five of the last six. If you need to make sure that you're putting points on the board and you need a rabble-rousing victory, Brentford is the place to go. If you need 3 points, go to the bus stop in Hounslow. Nicholas Jackson gave Chelsea the lead early on, and then it went to pot, Scott, because they just capitulate as soon as they have any sort of setback. And they had the setback in the game at Roerslav. The defending for all of the goals, Brentford and Chelsea, is absolutely appalling. All of it. I mean, Johan Vissel gets a load of credit for the overhead acrobatic bicycle kick. However, the fact that he had more space than the Milky Way to get that executed probably sort of negates the fact that it was so special. I mean, what will worry me if I'm Poch is that the fans have turned completely on Todd Boehly, calling him awful, awful. No, they've really gone in for him. That it shows how angry they are. I understand their anger completely, but they've really gone for it. And then they've gone after Maurizio Pochettino as well. And I think when you're in that zone, you're in massive trouble.
Absolutely. You know, once the owner gets stick, then the manager needs to be looking over his shoulder, because clearly there's not a lot he can do in terms of getting rid of players. He wants to try and do something different. I think Poch should be given to the end of the season. Like Ten Hag, he's on trial to the end of the season. I think it's a little bit unfair on him, but again, we spoke about it in the pod last week, didn't we? Just as they look like they're doing okay, they have a setback. I think this game here was what it was. It was a mid-table side against the mid to lower table side that actually aren't particularly
Which one was which?
good question. But, you know, the defending from De Sarzi is like, it's just, again, awful. Just like you think he's doing well. And then suddenly he comes out with defending like that. But look, Poch must be pulling his hair out. He doesn't, you know, he sets them up in training. He doesn't ask them to defend that poorly. And they had chances. And by the way, can I just mention again, Malagusto, how well he's doing?
Yeah, he's doing brilliant.
In a time where it's very difficult to be a Chelsea football player right now, I think he's been nothing short of sensational. And the biggest compliment I can give him is that if Reece James is fit, I wouldn't put him back in the side. But absolutely, it's all about the FA Cup and if you can somehow try and string wins together. But I don't see where it's coming.
That's it, Scott. You know, back to the old days, aren't we now? The good news is I had a quick look at the table this morning and Chelsea remain in the bottom half of the Premier League table. But don't worry, they're 16 points above the drop zone with 12 games left. I think they're going to be okay. Let's talk a little bit about Brentford, because Thomas Frank came out afterwards and said he wanted to speak to the fans who had booed and jeered his team when they were 1-0 down to Chelsea. His response was, "What the fudge? We need the fans." Maybe it was a little bit more colourful than that, but you get the point. And not only when it's going well, he said, should we respect him for taking on the fans and saying, come on, get a little bit real here? Or was that an ill-judged thing to say? I mean, bearing in mind Brentford's form is pretty catastrophic at this moment in time.
I think it comes back to what we were saying about West Ham recently. And, you know, you have to have a little bit of perspective about where you've come from. I used to cover Brentford a lot when they were in League One and when they were under Martin Allen. And if you'd have told me then they'd be a Premier League side and they'd be a Premier League side in multiple seasons and that they could come off a field against Chelsea and be disappointed they didn't win the game, I'd have thought you were mad. So the journey they've been on is extraordinary. And I'm kind of with him. You have to be bold to say something like that. And look, fans pay their money. They have the right to voice their displeasure if they're not happy. But I think it does need to be a bit of perspective there, because every season that Brentford stay in the Premier League is a huge achievement. It just is. There's just no getting away from it in terms of budget, in terms of, you know, overall institutional experience of being at that level. I think it is a massive, massive achievement. I think he's done a brilliant job. I think he's entitled to say, hang on, could we just slow down here a bit? You know, we're up against Chelsea, who are a big club. They're not acting like it at the moment, but they are a big club. And in the end, they fought through and they got the draw. So they're not going to go down.
And their defending has been crap.
Yes,
their
atrocious.
Defending has been dreadful. Collins has been for awful. So long, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been terrible. And I spoke to him about this, and it was after the Liverpool game, and I said to him, "Is there the one area that you've really got to hone in on, focus on defending?" And he went, yes, absolutely. And he was very sort of like he knows that that's a massive problem. But they've had a lot of injuries, remember.
Yeah.
They've had a terrible time with injuries over the course of the season themselves. And it's all right saying, well, everyone's had loads of injuries. But Liverpool having loads of injuries, Man City having loads of injuries, United having loads of injuries, and Brentford having loads of injuries, that's a very different scenario because of the depth of the respective squads. And he is a very honest, open, great communicator. I think he's a very, very good manager, Thomas Frank, yeah. And he deserves a little bit of leeway and all the credit that does come his way. I do think the heat's going to turn on Pochettino, though, because I think he's sort of managed to stave that off over the course of the season so far with lots of mitigating circumstances. They've got a big couple of weeks coming up. That FA Cup quarterfinal against Leicester is absolutely massive for them.
Both teams will be in their first choice colours. Spurs in all white, Palace in the red and blue. And it looks like Spurs will get us underway. Up steps Ezra, right footed. Curls it in! Fantastic free kick! He is back with a bang! Eberechi Eze scores for Crystal Palace. Delirium in that northeast corner. Oh, he's beaten Lerma. Johnson across the face of goal. Timo Werner! He missed a golden chance in the first half. He tucks it away in the second. And the Spurs players are sprinting back to halfway because they feel the job is only half done.
Madison lobs the ball into the box.
Headed in for a brilliant turnaround. And it's Cristian Romero who wheels away in celebration. They kept the centre-halves forward. Madison lobbed the ball into the box. And Cristian Romero got up highest, 6 yards out, and flicked the ball past the goalkeeper, and the turnaround is complete. Now the ball's ricocheted into the path of Son Heung-min. He's ahead of Richards. Son into the area to settle it! Was there ever any doubt when Son Heung-min races clear? He tucks it away into the bottom corner for his 13th Premier League goal of the season. And the points stay in North London. Spurs 3, Crystal Palace 1.
Let's go to North London. Tottenham against Crystal Palace finished with a 3-1 victory for Tottenham. But Tottenham would 1-0 down with 25 minutes to go. So another sort of feather in the cap for the mentality squad. My favourite tweet stroke Instagram post over the weekend was the one of Timo Werner running through one-on-one on goal, going round the goalkeeper so wide that he then couldn't turn back round and get the ball towards goal and completely fluffed his lines. And someone described Timo Werner as a Ferrari without a steering wheel. Eventually, though, he managed to find top gear to score his first goal for Tottenham Hotspur. I mean, we all love Timo because he's such a lovely bloke and he keeps on going and he's so self-effacing. He goes, yeah, I missed a chance. I'm an idiot, but I scored a brilliant goal. And you know what? Well done to him and well done to Tottenham for coming back because it was a tough thing to break down that Crystal Palace, Roy Hodgson defence. Oh, it's Oliver Glasner now, isn't it? Sorry, didn't see much of a difference.
Do you know what? I've just written, I've got in my notes here, 5-4-1 under Glasner, very Roy Hodgson. So absolutely. the best thing though about that was, did you hear the post-match afterwards when Crookie was speaking to Ange? And he
They're mates now.
Yeah, well, he asked a couple of questions and then he said, yeah, but wouldn't you want it done, you know, a little bit more in a calmer way, more controlled way? He said, come on, mate. You know, don't you enjoy it? You must enjoy these things. I'm fine with it. Why aren't you? And Adrian even said, he's put you in their place there, Crookie. Yeah, yeah. He really has. It was quite funny. But look, no, absolutely. Timo Werner, again, he's another one that, you know, is not a natural goal scorer, should we say, but would be a nightmare to play against. I'm really pleased for him because he does seem like a good lad and actually does very well in his position in terms of carrying the ball in the counter-attack in the style that Ange wants as well. But massive credit, you have to say, goes to Brennan Johnson. You know, Kev mentioned him earlier. That first goal, again, a little bit more inevitable at the Etihad, but that first goal was so important. They're always going to go on and win it if they got it. And I thought Brennan Johnson was superb and laid it on the plate.
Yeah, well, he's absolutely superb, but he got the benefit of robbing Joachim Andersen. What on earth is Joachim Andersen doing in the corner?
Yeah, he had a bad game, actually. Had a couple of errors, and he's brilliant on the ball. I do wonder about him defensively sometimes, actually, in terms of the pure defensive side of the game. I think he's brilliant in possession, you know, great at bringing the ball out, but I do think he has that in him to make those mistakes. I think Glasner will be in general happy with the couple of games that they've had so far. Obviously, a big win first time out. I think some of the work without the ball was very good, actually, in this game. I know they made mistakes towards the end, but in general, the shape looked good. And he's only had a short amount of time to work on the pressing and that side of the game, which he does very well. So I think...
Do you love Oliver Glasner?
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
From the Bundesliga. Because he's not German. He's not German. He's Austrian. But he's Austrian, German. You know, you sort of lump them all in together.
Oh, he's a Bundesliga. He's a Bundesliga guy.
If they come from the Bundesliga, you plant your flag in their head.
Well, this is why I was delighted for Turbo Timo to get his goal. And again,
Turbo Timo.
With him, right? Again, it's affecting the game. And Scott's mentioned it. He's always trying to do something. A lot of the time, it looks terrible. It looks really bad.
I think it's a good bit of business, Kev.
Yeah. I think he's playing in that wider role. I think sometimes he can be really dangerous there, actually, because he is quite smart. Julian Nagelsmann worked with him and really tried to improve that creative side of his game. So I think he's versatile. I think that speed makes such a difference. I'd rather have a Ferrari without a steering wheel than, you know, just a bog standard car, because he can make a big difference, and he's going to do terrible things. He'll volley over from a yard out, but the next time he might score a brilliant goal. So yeah, you never know what you're going to get, but you'll at least get something.
Listen, he's—I can't help but like the guy, and I wish him only the best. Tottenham Hotspur, I think, heading in the right direction, steering wheel or no steering wheel. Whether they get into the top four is a different matter, because Aston Villa, very good in the first half against Luton, would peg back in the second half, but again, showed the resilience, the mental fortitude to get that goal, to get them over the line. And Newcastle beat Wolverhampton Wanderers. Boy, did they need that victory. Scott, Eddie Howe, the man with a plan, working in tricky circumstances. You know, you've got Willock and Anderson, who aren't 100%, but coming into the team to help out when they need them the most. And Isak, Alexander Isak, he is just silky, superb and sexy, isn't he? What a fantastic footballer he is.
Absolutely, mate. And have you got inside Eddie Howe's head? Because you talked when you interviewed him after the Arsenal game about the system and this and that and what needs to change.
He wasn't happy about that.
The system was still the same, but it was very much different set of tactics, wasn't it?
It was. It was.
Kind of deep and it was counter and it was, you know, first clean sheet in what, 2.5 months was it? So, yeah, I wonder whether you should take a little bit of credit for that. But no, look,
we're,
I mean,
we're old friends. We're old friends, you know. Sometimes we draw on our old friends when we need help, and hopefully I have. If I've had a very small part, even a minuscule part, I'll be delighted because I'm so happy that even though he beat Gary, which was, you know, a bit difficult for me, it's like having two kids and not knowing which one of them you want to win. The fact is that Eddie needed it more than Gary this weekend, so I'm pleased for him.
Absolutely. And it does help as well when your two top scorers, Cunha and Huang, aren't playing. And then your two players as well come off at half-time, Neto and Saar.
And it was raining. It was raining, you know. It was difficult. It's a difficult place to go when it's raining like that. I always think anyway. What about Gary O'Neill? he'll be reflecting on that, thinking that you know, we just need to get to the international break, won't we, and get some of these players back to full fitness, Kev.
Yeah, I think he's done an amazing job. I really do.
Oh, yes.
I think it's right up there with any of the coaching we've seen in the Premier League this season. And I do think it's really shamed Julen Lopetegui, actually, who, you know, moaned about the squad, said, I can't work with this group of players. And Gary O'Neill's come in at very short notice. From the very opening weekend when they went to Old Trafford and played against Manchester United and should have won the game, you know, 3-0 and ended up losing it. Neto being back from injury is huge. He's been superb, I think, the last few weeks. If you don't have him, you're not as dangerous. Obviously, Huang being out, Cunha being out. But in general, the fact that they're not remotely being talked about as being a team that's been threatened by relegation is a huge achievement. And I think under him, there's a real connection with the fans. I think they're great. And I think they're fun. They weren't fun, really, under Bruno Lage, which is ironic because his Benfica team was great at one stage. They're really dull under him. And Lopetegui, the football wasn't great either. So I think he's done a really good job.
Good work for Gary O'Neill. Well done. Even though he didn't win this weekend, I'm sure they'll be back to be winning ways very shortly. A couple of big statistics from the weekend. Everton now 10 Premier League games without a win. That would worry me. Brighton, 5 wins from the last 21. That would concern me as well. But they are 9th in the Premier League. So if you're a Brighton fan, I got a message actually from a Brighton fan saying, you know, we're having the season of our lives. We don't care. You know, we're going to Rome.
Yeah.
The Europa League. We're in the top 10. We're fine. You know, I remember being at the Whit Dean. It's okay. Yes, it hasn't gone particularly well, but I think we sort of mentioned this beforehand. Mid-table teams have ups and downs. They don't always have ups. And when you've had a brilliant season like Brighton and Newcastle have had the previous season, sometimes you do hit a bit of a bump every now and again.
Well, look, they were superb last season, wasn't they? They were always going to find it difficult to combine go again in the Premier League and the Europa League. So I don't blame the Brighton fans saying, don't worry for us. We're actually still in the very good place.
Don't worry. It's okay. We're fine. Thank you very much. Worry more about Manchester United, who have lost 11 games in the Premier League this season and 11 points off Aston Villa in fourth place. Top four may well be over for them, but Erik ten Hag says, but what about top five? Kev, coefficient is a big thing. We know that it's very, very tight at this moment in time. It's going to require Manchester United fans to really support Aston Villa, Brighton and Liverpool and West Ham on Thursday nights, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. All of those results from the different competitions go in there. And there is a chance of top five, but I'm not sure United will even get top five. I think they're so inconsistent. I know it was going well when Højlund was scoring goals and, you know, they were digging out results, but it's just all
so random.
Against
Luton and Newport.
Oh, yeah. It's just all so random. You talk about Brighton. I know how Brighton play. They don't always win. And as you say, 5 wins out of 21. Squad depth is an issue. Injuries are an issue. All that stuff.
They're young.
They've got
a very young team.
And they're Brighton. So, you know, there has to be a dose of realism as well. However, I know how they play. Wolves, as I just mentioned, I know how they play. Manchester United, I look at, and I've said this a lot and I still think it's true, it's all a bit too improvisational jazz for me. I know there was a plan at the weekend, but it's so tin pot. Yeah, we've got to contain and counter and all that. But it's just, I don't blame Ten Hag entirely for it. A lot of it is behind the scenes stuff. A lot of it is stuff that he's inherited. But he's had nearly 2 seasons now, and I don't know what they are. And they're so far away from that clever Ajax team that got to those semi-finals of the Champions League. They were such a smart team who knew exactly what they were about. This team is nowhere near that.
And I'm guessing that even if the three of us were practicing for 2 years our improvisational jazz, we'd sound pretty good after that period. Yeah, I would have thought so. I mean, not wanting to blow our own trumpets.
Very good.
Anyway.
Very good.
I was waiting for his head to give it one of those as he was...
That's it. Manchester United against Everton actually forms our commentary next Saturday. It's going to be a big game for both. 10 games without a win for Everton. They go to Old Trafford. Manchester United desperate for 3 points as well. It's live 12:30 next Saturday. In between times, lots of football to come from the Champions League, the Europa League and beyond as well. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Crookie will be back from sunning himself next Monday on the old YouTube show. Maybe we won't even have him back. It will depend, I suppose, on whether or not Manchester United win or lose. See you then.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.